WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie American Splendor is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. Pekar doesn't draw. Several artists have illustrated his work, including Pekar's old friend R. Crumb, the father of underground comics. Crumb was Pekar's first collaborator. You met Crumb in 1962 when he moved to Philadelphia from Cleveland.
Yes,
and he lived
yes.
around the corner from you, and you used to go record
right.
collecting together. He wrote right. an introduction to the first collection of American Splendor comics, the first anthologized version. And
yeah.
and I'm going to read something that he said. He said, "Harvey was the first person I ever met who was a genuine hipster. I was very impressed. He was heavily into modern jazz, had big, crazy, abstract paintings on the wall of his pad, talked bop lingo, had shelves and shelves of books and records, and never cleaned his apartment. He was seething, intense, burning up, always moving, pacing, jumping around, just like a character out of Kerouac." What kind of connection did you make with Crumb? I know you shared a passion for music, for record collecting, but look, what was it about your sensibilities that you think really connected?
Well, I liked him very much personally, I'll say that. He was a real calm, quiet person. I mean, I know he's done some pretty wild things, but talking to him, you know, had a calming effect on me. And I guess you could figure if I was like Crumb said I was, I needed some calming down. And later on, I can remember discussing my theories about comics with him, like as to what kind of stories you could put on in them. Or, you know, I was telling him I thought you could put any kind of stories in them, or, you know, things like that. And so for years, these ideas were percolating in my mind about how to do a different kind of comic book. And in 1972, when Crumb was staying with me at my house or at my apartment building, I wrote down some of the stories I had made up, and I did it in storyboard fashion with panels and dialogue and captions and directions to the artists. And he looked at them and he said, "Wow, these are fine, you know, like, could I take some of these home, illustrate them?" And I was just totally, you know, knocked out. I mean, that Crumb illustrating my stuff would give it instant credibility, you know. And I was thrilled, and I've always been very grateful to Crumb for doing that. I mean, if not for him, I probably would not have gotten into comics at all.
When he first drew you, now you're used to all kinds of artists drawing you, and you're used to actors
yeah.
portraying you. But that first time when he drew you, when you were not used to it, what did you think of the way he drew you? And I should mention that I think of all the artists' portrayals of you that I've seen, his portrayals of you are the most kind of, you know, like neurotic and worried looking and ethnic looking.
Yeah. Well, I was a neurotic, worried ethnic and still am. I think I was just very impressed. Crumb just never disappoints me when he illustrates my work, and he sometimes surprises me by doing things I didn't expect. I mean, like, for example, in a story called Hypothetical Quandary, that and maybe some other stories too, his work really knocked me out because this was a straight, serious story, and his illustration was less cartoony and more realistic than it normally was, and it worked. It seemed like nothing this guy could do, you know, it seemed like everything the guy did worked. You know, he was that sharp, that keen.
And you never said to me, like, make me more handsome.
Oh, no, I would never presume to do that. No. I mean, I didn't tell people on the movie set what to do, and I didn't tell Crumb. I don't tell these people, you know, usually what to do. It's just like I just give him an assignment and I take, you know, pretty much what's given to me. I mean, I've fortunately been working with a lot of really good artists, and I don't have to, you know, struggle or fight for what I want.
Joyce, you were a reader of American Splendor before you met
you
Harvey.
You should ask me about how I felt when I was first rendered in the comic.
I'll go ahead, answer that question.
Okay. I did ask that I not be drawn like a comic book female. And the first artist who drew
me... Wait, comic book female meaning like big curvaceous, lots, you know, big bosom?
Yeah. Basketballs pushed down inside a spandex leotard, things like that.
The standard R. Crumb female, in other words.
No. Crumb never drew me. The first artist who drew me as... Well, he'd been doing a lot of illustrations for a local strip joint for ads or something like that. So I came out looking like a Barbie doll. And I'm not even talking about the new modified Barbie doll who has had breast reduction surgery or something like that. I was long-legged, straight-backed, you know, enormous front. And the weird thing was that I was blonde. Harvey and I have the same color hair. And there are plenty of pictures of us, and there'd be pictures of us standing together in the same light. He'd be the brunette, I'd be blonde. And I remember bringing this to the artist's attention after it was done, and he said, "Oh, my God, you're not blonde." And that's because in comic books, women are supposed to be voluptuous and blonde and completely not looking like me.
So... did the artist comply with your request? And Harvey had yeah, go ahead.
No, we part of the fun of all this is to send it out and see what somebody's going to come back with. It's not we'd be drawing them ourselves if we really wanted to have that kind of control.
Harvey, did you want Joyce to be portrayed as more glamorous than she was in real life, or did you want it to be as true to who she was as possible, just as you wanted your own depiction to be as true to yourself?
I wanted things to be accurate, but
we weren't paying this guy enough money to start insisting on major changes.
I have to say though that I think Joyce looked a lot less like a female superhero than her remarks would lead you to believe.
Well, Harv, this is the...
He did draw you with glasses.
The first artist that I'm talking about was Mitch.
Yeah, I know who it was.
Okay, afterwards, we never worked with him again. And afterwards...
I worked with him one more time.
One more time, yeah. But other artists got the point because, we're more direct about it. And then I started coming out looking like this harpy with rays coming out of my eyes, deadly rays that would bore into Harvey's head while he would not wash the dishes appropriately, things like that.
Yeah.
Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner will talk more about American Splendor in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. Pekar writes the autobiographical comic book series American Splendor. Many of his stories have been about his married life with Brabner, who used to run a comic book store. She's also written journalistic comics. Now there's a new film adaptation of American Splendor, which stars Paul Giamatti as Pekar and Hope Davis as Brabner. But the real Pekar and Brabner are also in the film, talking about their lives. Joyce, when you got married to Harvey, you knew that you would be a character in his stories because the stories are autobiographical. And so it changed your life not only because you now had, you know, a partner in life. You were also in a position where parts of your life together were going to be described in this comic book. What was it like for you to suddenly be a part of the comic book that you had read and to know that things that you said... things that you did might end up in the story?
Well, it was a little annoying because I could no longer enjoy the comics once a year. I always knew what was going in, and so I was deprived of that, you know, the experience of just opening a fresh new copy and finding out what had happened to this character this year. But it was sort of incumbent upon me to make sure that our marriage had a happy ending. I first became really aware of what was going on when, after about a year or so, people, you know, send fan mail to Harvey all the time, and we got letters that said things like, well, we weren't real sure about you, you know, in issue 9, but now that we've seen what's going on in issue 10, you know, it seems like you're here to stay and you're good for our man. And so, you know, the marriage was approved of by all these people who don't know who we are but just read about us in comics.
That's kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, to have readers weighing in on whether you're the right choice.
it's either people like that or relatives, and Harvey didn't come with a whole lot of in-laws and relatives.
That's funny. So you have to please the readers.
Yeah. And it matters just about as much. You know, we see them and hear from them about as often as you'd hear from, you know, long-distant aunts and cousins. And
you know, there's parts in American Splendor, the comic, and American Splendor, the new movie, where you seem to drive each other a little crazy. What's it like to expose that part of the relationship to the public? That's the kind of stuff people like to not have people see.
Well, actually, in my case, it's very liberating because now that everybody sees what I have to put up with, I mean, people are almost offended if Harvey doesn't have a meltdown or something, or do something gauche, or
it's like part of the show.
Whatever. It's. I think it's when you try and hide these things, you get into trouble. But now, it's like he gets paid to be this way. He gets paid to be squirrely.
Harvey, what's your take on this?
Well, I don't deliberately act, you know, neurotic, although I guess I am. But I don't try, you know, I don't do it because anybody's paying me to do it. And I'm glad that Joyce allows me, you know, so easily to write about our disagreements and stuff like that, because I don't want to idealize our marriage. At the same time, we've been together for 20 years now, and we're still working things out, and we're still, you know, growing. And I think it's a good marriage.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. And Harvey writes the American Splendor autobiographical comic books. There's a new movie adaptation of American Splendor, and it stars Paul Giamatti as Harvey Pekar and Hope Davis as Joyce Brabner. And how many years have you been married? 20 years?
Yes.
20.
20.
One of the best-known works that you did was a collaboration between you and Joyce called Our Cancer Year, about the year that you were diagnosed with lymphoma and you had chemo, and you were very, very sick. But then you went into remission and seemed to be clear. And was it after retirement that it came back?
Yeah, that's where
It came back right after the movie wrapped.
So did you have to do chemo all over again?
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad physically as last time. Actually, Harvey had been pronounced cured, and so this might actually be coincidental rather than related. But it was still really, really rough because he was still kind of depressed and out of sorts, trying to find his way after retiring. I mean, he'd retired, begun working on this movie, and then, boom, he's got a tumor again.
In what way was it not as bad as the first time around?
Medically, because when Harvey had his treatment 10 years ago, it was horrific. They were telling him he was taking the second harshest form of of chemotherapy, the second harshest protocol, and it was very rough on him, but this time physically it was better. There is a lot of deja vu, though. I mean, George Bush was president then. George Bush was president when he had lymphoma this last time. We were in a Persian Gulf War. The first time he had cancer, another Persian Gulf War. I was involved with 15-year-olds from different countries who were war survivors, and now I'm guardian to a 15-year-old girl. So it kind of felt like we were stuck in the same tape loop.
I think one of the main reasons that I didn't suffer as much the second time as the first time around when I had cancer was that they'd come up with some milder medication.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They had much mm-hmm. better medication.
So did doctors give you the all clear this time around?
Yeah, I'm in remission again.
Good.
I was just found in remission again last. Well, I mean, it's been some months since I've been in remission, but I just saw the doctor last Friday, and I'm still in remission. So,
good.
Knock on wood.
My guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie American Splendor is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie American Splendor is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. Harvey, I'd like to ask you a few things about your background, starting with your parents. This comes from one of your comics you wrote about your family's attitudes toward getting into fights when you were a kid. You wrote, "My family considered physical violence and even sports as unthinkably barbaric activities fit only for Gentiles." Tell me a little bit about your parents.
Well, my parents were both from northeastern Poland, from Shtetls. My mother's from a place called Brestovice, and my father's from a place called Nowy Dwór. And my mother came over to the United States first in the 1920s. And I don't know, I think maybe partly because she was like really short, you know. She couldn't find a husband. And she got sent back to Europe again in 1935, and I guess at that time, she was supposed to be, or maybe my relatives who were still there were supposed to be, you know, looking out for her and trying to find her somebody. And she did come up with my father. My father's, as long as I've known him, my father's been real religious, and my mother was a communist. We were for Henry Wallace in 1948, but they seem to have resolved their differences that way. I know that
they were both short.
Yeah, well, my mother wouldn't go to shul on the high holidays and stuff like that, and. But they got along. They respected their differences. I don't know of too many cases that are like that, because they both believed pretty strongly in what they in my mother's case in her politics, and my father's case in his religion.
I could see how both a communist parent and a religious parent would think that reading comic books was frivolous and something to be discouraged. What did your parents think of your interest in comic books and music or any other parts of pop culture?
Well, they thought it was just a waste of time. I didn't read comic books from the age of 11 until I moved out of the house, so that was one thing they didn't have to worry about. But I mean, and my father tried to be tolerant of jazz, although I don't think he liked it very much. He collected Chazanishe records, you know.
What kind of record?
Chazanishe, cantors.
Oh.
The records of cantors, like Yisroel Rosenblatt or Moishe Kusevitzky or Well, you know, there used to be a guy that used to sing for the Met that was also a cantor by the name of Richard Tucker. I don't know if you know about
right,
his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to. So my father was into collecting these records too. I wasn't the first record collector in the family.
Did you like those cantor records?
At first, they just made me so depressed and sad. I couldn't take them. But
why were they depressing?
That's the way they. Have you heard them? You've heard them, haven't you?
Well, I've heard cantors. I'm not sure I've heard the records that you're talking about.
Yeah, but the style is extremely. You know, it's really, you know, like a melancholy. Pain style of singing, and I really like it now, I really do. But and I you know collected about I don't know maybe 100 or more cantorial LPs, you know, just have so that I could refer to them, and but it's. Well, one guy described it as the cantors were men with tears in their voices.
Right.
It's sort of like I don't want to make it too close an analogy, but it's sort of like equivalent to blues singing in a way.
I regret that we're really out of time, so one last question for you both.
Okay.
How do you and how do you not want the movie adaptation of American Splendor to change your lives?
The big thing about doing the movie is access. It grants Harvey access to more chances to work, which means he isn't going to hang around the house and drive me crazy. And he can, you know, I mean, he's... You know, as somebody who's self-educated and been self-published for as long as he was, I think at this point it'd be nice if he wouldn't have to keep proving himself every time he got a gig. So we like that. According to form, we're supposed to get divorced as soon as the movie peaks.
I mean, because that's what happens when
that's just what
when
happens
celebrity when, strikes.
Exactly. Yeah. As soon as celebrity strikes, I'm gonna have to run away with a I don't know what cameraman or something like that.
Or Harvey gets to run away with a 25-year-old model, right?
Well, he can't really run.
Perish the thought.
Yeah. Harvey, what else do you or do you not want from the movie?
Well, it's pretty much like Joyce says. I'd like the opportunity to get more writing jobs. And, you know, like, as a matter of fact, every time somebody will interview me or something like that, well, I'm not going to do this to you, Terry, but I would ask them if there's anything, you know, anything at their magazine or anything like that that I could do. Can I write some jazz criticism for you? Can I write some, literary criticism for you. I'm pretty aggressive and maybe obnoxious about trying to get work, but I realize that it's really essential that when the dust has settled from this movie, that I still am, you know, somebody that people want to work with.
Are you willing to risk being obnoxious to get that?
Yeah. It comes easy.
Yeah, it's. I don't think there's any risk involved for the being obnoxious. I don't even think there's any willing. I think Harvey is more or less compelled to be obnoxious to get this stuff. He's a very driven character.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't help myself. What can I do?
Well, I regret we're out of time. I really enjoyed talking to you both.
Thanks.
Love the movie, love the comic, and thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Terry.
Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie, American Splendor, is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. It won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. American Splendor stars Paul Giamatti as Pekar and Hope Davis as Brabner. The film, which is in part about married life, was written and directed by the husband and wife team, Sherry Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini. They're our next guests. They also directed the documentary Off the Menu, The Last Days of Chasins, about the famous restaurant which catered to a Hollywood celebrity clientele. Did Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner give you any advice on writing for them or on writing for the fictionalized versions of them?
Well, you know, they were pretty hands-off. It was kind of amazing. I mean, Harvey really prides himself on this warts-and-all portrayal. So, I mean, his one caveat, if he had any, was, you know, please don't whitewash me as a character. You know, that's not what I'm about. You know, when you do a true story about someone who's alive, you know, your big fear is that they're going to interfere and try to protect themselves in the process. But they didn't do that at all.
Now, in the documentary part, in one of the documentary parts of American Splendor, Joyce, Harvey's wife, says that Harvey can be very depressed and therefore very depressing. Is that something that came up with you, like dealing with both of their mood swings on the set? You know, because Joyce is prone to depression also.
Yeah. Harvey's obsessive compulsive and very sweet at the same time. So it's an interesting combination, you know. He would call us a lot with, you know, worried about things. And I don't think he ever really believed the film was happening. So he was always worried before, you know, when we were in pre-production that it was going to fall apart. And then once things were rolling on the set, he was able to relax a little bit more. Although when we needed him to come on and do his thing, he was, you know, pretty grumpy and hard to manage. But that's just Harvey, you know. And Joyce, I think, you know, she protects Harvey a lot, so she's naturally suspicious of everyone, you know, that comes on board and you know, I guess they had some bad experiences in the past. So she, you know, she was very protective of Harvey and his portrayal. And, you know, on set, maybe she had more of she was a little more cautious than Harvey in watching. But ultimately, they weren't much of a problem.
Harvey Pekar's big moment of celebrity was in the mid to late 80s when he was a guest several times on the David Letterman show. And those appearances were always really weird. He'd be on to promote American Splendor. And, you know, Harvey would be mocking Dave for being a phony celebrity. And David Letterman would be mocking Harvey for being so eccentric. And things usually go kind of like so smoothly. It's like one celebrity to another on these late night shows. But Harvey was so eccentric and so himself that it was this like really odd match, and you'd kind of be on the edge of your seat thinking something's going to go terribly, horribly wrong any second. And for these appearances, you use the actual David Letterman footage with the real Harvey Pekar, except for the very last in this sequence. And this was the time when Harvey Pekar was on Letterman wearing his On Strike Against NBC t-shirt and going on about the conglomerate that owned NBC, and David Letterman was getting very obviously uncomfortable with it. Why didn't you use the real David Letterman footage for that? Did they not want you to use it?
The real Letterman footage for that fight was restricted by NBC. Harvey names a lot of names, and it was immediately restricted after broadcast. You know, we actually had a copy of it, and we had a VHS copy. We were able to edit with it just to see what it would feel like. And in truth, it was so hard to understand because they were kind of yelling over each other that, you know, when people saw it in the cut, it didn't make any sense. And they had a lot of questions about it. And it also felt, at that point in the story, it felt wrong to leave the character, the Harvey character that Paul Giamatti was playing, where he was emotionally. You know, it's a very interior sequence. He thinks he may have cancer and his wife is away and he's extremely depressed, and it's all kind of part of a longer sequence. So we thought, let's recreate it and have a different perspective on it, you know, shoot it from behind the stage and kind of tie it to the rest of what's going on in Harvey's life.
Why don't we hear your version of that that appearance by Harvey Pekar on David Letterman? And this is the fictionalized version from the film American Splendor.
Harvey, this is not the forum. This is not Meet the Press.
You just want me to talk about simple-minded bull, David. But I ain't co-opted like you, man.
Oh, relax,
I want to say,
man.
For instance, like, I want to talk about a conflict of interest situation. Harvey. Can we do that, David? How about that? You know, like GE owning this network, NBC. GE has basically become a military, industrial, financial communications
company. Can we get the singing shih tzu back out here, Larry? Has he left the building yet?
NBC is going to cover what they do fairly? That's funny, Dave.
Harvey.
I got other things I want to talk about, though.
That's enough,
Harvey. Just shut up, man. Don't push me, man. I'm doing my own thing.
Harvey.
That's Paul Giamatti playing Harvey Pekar and Jeff Peters playing David Letterman in the new movie American Splendor, which is based on the comics, the real-life comics of Harvey Pekar. And my guests are the director-screenwriter team who made the movie, Shari Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini. Have you heard about from NBC at all about this scene?
I don't think so. I don't know if the producers have heard anything. We certainly haven't heard anything.
Hopefully we won't be the people hearing about it.
I mean, you know, the thing is, Harvey has a lot of affection for Letterman. I think at first he was in on the joke, and then it became tiresome for him, and he had to destroy it, you know. So I think if you talk to Harvey, you'll see that he actually has a lot of affection for the guy. I mean, they're both from the Midwest, and, you know, it was an interesting relationship.
Also, Harvey told me, he said, you know, man, since I did those shows, we both had really hard times. I mean, both Harvey had cancer and David Letterman had his open heart surgery. So I think, like, illness humbles everyone, and they kind of found that as a common denominator.
We'll talk more about American Splendor after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Shari Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini. They wrote and directed the new film American Splendor, which is based on Harvey Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. Now, the two characters at the center of your film, Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner, are married, and they have a kind of neurotic, bickering relationship. You are married too. Shari, Robert, you're married to each other. Does being married yourself help give you insights into how to write a married couple?
Well, we certainly know how to write arguments, I think. I think we have a good ear for that. I mean, it was interesting because sometimes Harvey would come up to me and complain about Joyce on the set, and, you know, Joyce would go up to Shari and complain about Harvey, and it was a very strange dynamic.
Right.
Yeah.
There were a lot of times when Joyce would call and say, you know, Bob would pick up the phone and she'd say, put Shari on the phone. And she'd start complaining about something Harvey did. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, Bob does the exact same thing. And, you know, Harvey would call really early and try to talk to Bob about Joyce and so on.
But, you know, when you're watching people you know who are in a relationship not getting along, when you're watching them have a fight or being neurotic with each other, you kind of want to, like, look away. It makes you really uncomfortable. But here you are, not only in the middle of it, but you should be kind of soaking it up so you can capture it in the screenplay. So, you know, what was it like for you? Because it was probably making you uncomfortable, but at the same time, you got to be using that as information to help you document what their relationship is like.
Well, our first trip to Cleveland to meet Harvey and Joyce, and this was even before we were officially on the project. It was kind of like a mutual check each other out trip. I'd say maybe within 10 minutes of meeting Harvey and Joyce, they had an argument, a very big vocal one. But Bob and I, we come from documentaries, so we kind of we're pretty comfortable with watching things unfold and being the people who document it. The other thing also is that Harvey and Joyce, having spent a lot of time with them, they might argue a lot, but we've also seen a lot of strength in their marriage and, you know, sort of the beauty of their marriage. And, you know, I've seen Joyce do things to protect Harvey. I've seen Harvey do things to protect Joyce. And there's a lot of love there, too.
Now that you've done a movie about Harvey's comics which feature all the people, or at least a lot of the people in his actual life, have you become characters in his work?
Well, we've certainly popped up in one or two recently. Harvey documents everything in his life, so I know the movie is a big part of that. So, yeah, it comes full circle, I guess, and we're fair game for him now. And, you know, now we'll read his perspective on us, I guess.
Are you uncomfortable about being characters in his comics?
Well, it wouldn't be fair to be uncomfortable. I mean, he gave us license to make a movie about him, so that's his art form. And no, I I'm not uncomfortable with it at all.
Taste of your own medicine.
Yeah. You know, it's fun. And let's see what he does.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Shari Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini wrote and directed the new film American Splendor. It opens in New York, L.A., and Cleveland August 15th and will open in more cities in the following weeks.